Sorry. We are now recording. Hear ye, this Honorable Appellate Court for the Second Judicial District is now in session. The Honorable Robert D. McLaren presiding. Your Honors, the first case on the docket this afternoon is 2-21-0715, the people of the state of Illinois, plaintiff appellee, v. Casey Robert Hagstead, defendant appellant. Arguing for the appellant, Mr. Andrew T. Moore. Arguing for the appellee, Ms. Amy M. Watroba.
Thank you. Mr. Moore, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Andrew Moore, and I'm here on behalf of my client, Casey Hagstead, who is joining us on the call today. The United States Supreme Court has held that all details within one's home are considered intimate details because the entire area is held safe from prying government eyes.
Mr. Moore, you concede, and the defense counsel conceded in the trial court, that Officer Liebich was in a place where he had a right to be under the emergency or slash caretaking exception to the warrant requirement, correct?
He entered the home under that. I'm not sure what defense did below.
Counsel conceded at oral argument on the motion that Officer Liebich had a right to go into the kitchen to check on the stove.
He had a right to go into the kitchen, but that doesn't give him the right to do whatever he wants within that kitchen. He has to stay within the scope of his authorization to be there.
What case law supports that position?
Well, the People versus Marcoot.
Marcoot was different. Marcoot, in that case, the officers had already restrained the defendant. He was in the living room sitting on a couch. Two uniformed police officers, armed police officers, were with him. Yet the other officer followed the female, the woman, into the bedroom to get her clothes. And that's when the observation was made that led to the seizure, correct?
Correct. So that exceeded the scope of their authorization within the house, just as searching this cabinet exceeded the within the.
The United States Supreme Court has made clear that the circumscribed level of inspection that they talked about in Mincy versus Oklahoma or Mincy versus in the I'm trying to find my notes here. In Mincy versus Arizona, the court said the language strictly circumscribed by the exigencies which justified the initiation was addressing only the scope of the primary search itself and not overruling by implication many cases acknowledging the plain view doctrine can legitimate actions beyond that scope. So the Supreme Court has made clear, so long as a police officer is in a place where he's entitled to view, he can use the plain view. He can look into areas that are open to inspection.
Well, let's talk about if he was in a place where he was legally allowed to be when he looked into the cabinet. I'll concede that he was in a place where he was legally allowed to be when he saw the locked cabinet, the padlock, which, you know, is also a clear expression of a stated privacy interest. But approaching that cabinet, doing the steps that were needed to look into that cabinet was outside of the scope of his legal reasons to be in the house. Therefore,
you are ignoring my question. The Supreme Court's made clear, and appellate courts in Illinois, our Supreme Court has made clear that if a police officer is in a position where he has a legal right to be, he can make observations. He's not required to put blinders on or shut down his senses or his ability to observe things. And the court made clear that the use of a flashlight is not a search. It's not an intrusion. It's an observation, not a search. And the trial court credited Officer Liebich's testimony and asked pointedly, do you have any case law for the authority that use of a flashlight is a search? And counsel conceded, no, he did not have any case law. He merely argued, quote unquote, the totality of the circumstances.
I disagree with your assertion that I'm ignoring the case law. I'm actually applying it here.
What case law? I mean, again, let me ask you, what case law says that a police officer cannot use his senses of observation when the emergency or whatever puts him in that position has elapsed?
Your Honor, if I can finish what I'm saying here, the officer's only legally allowed to be in the house under the community caretaking rules if he's furthering that. He can't go in and conduct a criminal investigation. When the officer chose to abandon that objective and to investigate the contents of a cabinet, that was leaving the scope of his community caretaking doctrine. He didn't have to avert his eyes. He had to actively seek out what was in this cabinet. This wasn't something that was on the table, that was out in the open. This was something that was within a cabinet with an extremely minor structural flaw that allowed him to view inside with effort. And going to the use of the flashlight.
What effort? You said using effort. What effort?
Well, he had to position himself in a way where he could look into a 1-inch gap into this cabinet, which is on the lower part of the cabinet. So he would have to bend over, peer into this cabinet. And also, the use of a flashlight doesn't per se like impugn the fourth.
Would you agree that the locked cabinet, how many padlocked cabinets with a chain and a padlock have you seen in your lifetime in a kitchen?
The level of suspicion has no bearing on.
Well, no, the counsel agreed and said that his attention was drawn to it because it was rather unique. It was closed and locked.
It doesn't matter if that's what drew his attention. It doesn't matter.
Could a normal private citizen who was in that kitchen have looked into the cabinet in the same way? For example, a guest in the home.
Under the Fourth Amendment, he could, because he's not a government actor. But
well, that's the whole purpose of the plain view exception. If you're in a position where some other citizen could be, or a guest in a home, to make an observation, it's not a violation. It's plain view.
That's incorrect, because he has to be in a place where he's legally allowed to be.
And he was.
He's not legally allowed to be there once he decided to look into that cabinet. Where he was legally allowed to be was when he turned around and he saw the lock. That was where he was legally allowed to be. When he approached that cabinet, when he took all the steps to look into that cabinet, that took him out of his role. During this ongoing investigation, he testified that it still smelled strongly of gas in the house. His partner is in the room trying to get the defendant out of the house because paramedics had stated that it's a risk for him to be there. So,
and my question is this, it's simple. What case law do you have for that position that the officer can't use his flashlight to look, just like a police officer who's in a bedroom and sees a partially open closet? The case law allows him to use the flashlight to look in that closet.
Well, let's look.
Even though it's not related to the scope of or the reason for his being present.
I'm not focused on specifically the flashlight. His use of a flashlight evidences that he wasn't concerned about the community caretaking role that he's supposed to be keeping.
But
now, if you want to talk about
that, argument was not made at the trial level. Counsel focused on the flashlight. He said the flashlight was the problem here.
Your Honor, I'm not bound by what was argued below. I can argue. I don't have to argue exactly what was argued below. And if you want to talk about closets,
you're asking us to reverse, and you're relying on an argument that was not made below.
What argument would that be?
That the officer has abandoned the quote-unquote scope of why he was there.
I'm not bound by the exact arguments made below, and neither is this court. You can decide this de novo. It's applying the law, so then the review is de novo. You're not bound by what happened below.
Well, let's add another fact, if I may, Justice Burkett. First of all, Mr. Moore, your picture is no longer there, but that's, I guess, if your camera doesn't allow it, that's fine. There we go.
I'm sorry. It keeps turning out for some reason.
Okay. In this kitchen, another fact that makes this locked cabinet rather interesting is we'll call it a nest camera or some sort of a camera on top of the refrigerator that's looking directly at that cabinet or aimed directly at that cabinet. Why is the officer not allowed to be curious about what that is? Not speculation, but just this is a lock cabinet in a kitchen and there's a camera looking directly at it. Why should he not take a pause and look in that cabinet?
First to address that, Officer Liebich never testified that he saw any of that. That was Officer Stanish who arrived second.
But they were both there.
All of this comes down to what Liebich did, what Liebich saw. He never testified that he saw that when he entered the kitchen.
But Stanish is the one who looked in too.
But Stanish didn't look in until after he physically opened the cabinet, which as ruled below was clearly a search because there was a physical intrusion. So his observations don't mean anything right now.
Let me ask you this. Would you agree that under the plain view exception, and really it's not an exception, it's not really a search, that's what the Supreme Court has said, would you agree that the officer's motives are irrelevant to the plain view exception so long as the officer's in a place where he has a right to be and the incriminating nature or contraband nature of the material is evident?
I don't think that the officer's intent is dispositive, but it's certainly informative.
The Supreme Court has said it's irrelevant. It's an objective. We look at objectively from, is an officer in a place where he has a right to be? And is it immediately apparent that the item seized is either contraband or incriminating evidence?
And the answer to those questions is no, where he was legally able to be.
You're saying he was not legally able to be, even though his original entry and his presence in the kitchen was justified?
Correct. Just as in Mercute, he was authorized to enter the house.
Mercute, the officer was not authorized to be in the bedroom.
Neither was this officer authorized to be in a position where he's looking into this cabinet. It's the same. I mean, Mercute, he entered a different room, but ultimately it's the same analysis. What has to happen in order to effectuate your warrantless entry into the home? That court held that he didn't have to go into that room. He could say he's protecting the woman who was getting her belongings. That was what was argued, but the court held that he should have used the least intrusive, which would be to stay with the defendant.
But the court also said if he had, and I haven't read it in a while, but the court also said if there was a legitimate basis to be in there, he could have looked.
Correct, because the closet door was wide open.
Right, just like this officer looked in the closet or in the cabinet.
And his steps that he had to take in order to look into that cabinet took him out of the community caretaking role, and therefore he was no longer, the case law says once you abandon or complete your community caretaking roles, you have to exit the house immediately.
And the trial court said that Officer Liebich's observation was authorized, that there was a legitimate observation, correct?
The trial court did say that, yes.
So that obviously that's your point is that's a legal issue for us. We review that finding as it relates to whether or not the Fourth Amendment permitted the officer to do that de novo, right?
Yes. I mean, it's not a factual finding. It's an analysis of.
Well, it's both. It's mixed. But you're correct. Ultimately, our review is de novo. But the court said and asked counsel pointedly, why is the use of the flashlight? Why does it vitiate plain view?
Yeah, And there is case law that says the use of a flashlight doesn't in and of itself violate plain view, but it's evidence here. He didn't need the flat here. He didn't
Let me ask you this. It's not clear from the record whether or not he first used the flashlight or if he looked first and saw what he thought to be cannabis and then confirmed it with the flashlight.
It is. It's in the record. I don't have the page number, but he testifies that he initiated using his flashlight in order to look into the cabinet.
Okay. Okay. And so what if he hadn't used the flashlight and he just saw the cannabis right away?
Still, I would point to, it still would, in this exact scenario, it would still be a search because he.
Why?
From where?
Looking, using your eyesight is never a search if you're in a position where you're entitled to be.
Well, he's not, I'm arguing he's not, and once he decides to take any action that's not in pursuit of his community caretaking roles, he's no longer a community caretaker. So because of that, I see my time's up. If you all have any other questions, I can address them now, or we can wait till the...
Have you read Hicks?
Oh, what was that?
Have you read Hicks?
Yes. Yeah.
What do you think its interpretation would be insofar as applying the law to the facts in this case?
Hicks was a little bit different. If I'm, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. This is the using a flashlight to look into a vehicle case?
No.
No.
Yeah.
What are the basic facts of Hicks?
This is the stolen equipment, stolen stereo equipment.
Oh, the stereo equipment case. And what was the question again?
The officers looked at what they thought to be suspicious stereo equipment. And on one item, they could see the serial numbers, but then they went further and moved objects to view and record other serial numbers. That was the crux of it. But the initial emergency that drew the police officers to that residence was there had been a shooting. And so they had already eliminated the issue of safety and recovering firearms. And then they went on to start inspecting the stereo equipment they suspected might have been stolen.
Right. Yeah. Sorry. I mixed the two cases up. But that analysis, it would still be an illegal search because there what they viewed was actually in plain view. I think that's really what gets forgotten about these plain view cases is plain view isn't, you can view it regardless of what you have to do to view it. These serial numbers were right out in the open. So there's no reasonable expectation of privacy over those. Where here, Casey has put a very clear display of a privacy expectation. So if there was some effort made to block those serial numbers, it would have been a search, but they were right out in the open, so therefore it was not a search.
Justice McLaren, I have another question, if I might.
You may.
Mr. Moore, why was the search warrant not attached, or where is this search warrant?
I don't know exactly. There was an issue with the motion below, as far as not the original motion didn't make arguments based on the search warrant. So typically we only get things that were evidence at trial. So,
but it's apparent that the search warrant was not attached to anything, which would be standard operating procedure under most circumstances, since it's the defendant's burden, correct?
Correct.
And so how do we treat the fact that the warrant isn't there? Do we just say, oh, it's not there? Or do we say there may be a reason it's not there and it affects this privacy issue?
I think that to address that issue, I think the testimony was clear as to what the basis for that warrant was. And it was a second entry into the home where they allegedly all of a sudden could smell a strong smell of marijuana after a gas leak. But there was no justification for that second entry. So the warrant would not be Really, everything comes down to Liebich, because his observations filtered to Stanish, and then Stanish's observations ended up all in a second entry of the home, which was not justified under any exigent circumstance.
Well, Judge, the trial court made a comment about the search warrant, both at his original ruling as well as the ruling on a motion to reconsider. Without the search warrant, I can't determine whether or not there was an independent basis for the search. And we, without the search warrant, how do we know? That's what the court said.
Well, we have testimony as to what was in that search.
Well, you have partial testimony that it was Liebich's observations, but there's obviously other evidence that could have been in that search warrant, which we don't know. For example, the defendant's criminal history. The defendant was, and I know he's on this call, he was addicted, and you talk about privacy issues. It may well have been a locked cabinet to protect his stash from other people, not a privacy interest, but just like a person who locks up his or her alcohol to keep it from kids. So there's a lot that could be in that warrant that we don't know about.
Well, to address the privacy comment, it doesn't matter what is in a container. It's the privacy interest. Everything is protected if you...
Right.
I guess to address your questions, there's not any... The state hasn't put forth anything to show that there was anything in that warrant outside of the testimony. So I'm relying on the testimony as to what the officers did, which was they got outside of the house. They realized they probably messed up. So they call their lead detective, who calls the state's attorney, and they try to devise a plan as to get a warrant to cover up for their mistakes.
That brings me to another question. And it briefly, if I can, Judge McLaren, kind of demeaning language. You said, for example, you say at page 3 of your reply brief, it will take some time to deconstruct the state's tone deaf and hypocritical argument in response. What did you mean by that?
Well, the state frequently goes back when justifying Liebich's presence that he was concerned about my client Casey's safety, but that is hypocritical because his actions within the house show that he cared nothing about my client's safety. He was in the house for perhaps less than a minute before he starts searching through his kitchen cabinets.
You've never met Officer Liebich, have you? Or Officer Stanish?
No, I haven't.
Would you agree that police officers are trained to observe, to listen, to be cautious, to be curious, and that obviously they're also trained to stay within the confines of the Fourth Amendment, and they were not trying to cover anything up? They were told they should probably get a search warrant because of the locked nature. That's not trying to cover anything up. And I'll leave you with this. Personal attacks. Do not personally attack opposing counsel. Attack only their arguments. Stay above the fray. Attacking opposing counsel will result in a judge questioning the advocate's judgment and character, which distracts from the focus of the brief. I'll leave it with that.
I'd hope that you'd apply the same discerning eye to the state's briefs as well.
That's just a lesson learned. Of course we do.
Sue, did you have a question?
No, I have no other questions.
Thank you. Mr. Moore, you'll have an opportunity to make rebuttal. Thank you. Ms. Wetroba, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Honorable Justices and Counsel. May it please the court, my name is Amy Wetroba. I work for the DuPage County State's Attorney's Office, and I'm representing the people today. I believe I'll start where Justice McLaren left off, which is the question of how would this case be viewed in light of Arizona versus Hicks? And I disagree with opposing counsel. I think Arizona versus Hicks supports the trial court's conclusion in this case. In Hicks, the officers entered an apartment after there had been a shooting of some sort, and they were there investigating that and also checking to see if other people were okay. And while they were there, they noticed expensive stereo equipment that seemed out of place based on the way the apartment appeared. And they went closer to that stereo equipment, they recorded serial numbers, and they had to move the equipment to do so. So here's where here's what's really important. It obviously differs somewhat factually because nothing was moved here. In finding and discussing plain view and what was permitted under plain view and what was not, the court made several important observations. They said first, the initial observations of the quote unquote suspicious stereo equipment were okay. Those are in plain view. As Justice Burkett noted, officers are allowed to use their senses to note things and see things and smell things and hear things. They also noted that approaching that equipment and recording the serial numbers would have also been okay under the plain view doctrine. Where the problem came in was where they manipulated and moved the stereo equipment to get certain additional information. So based on that case law, what happened here, what Officer Liebig did, is akin to making an observation and then viewing. I will agree that the record is a bit unclear as to the exact timing and order of whether he observed where he was standing in the kitchen when he first observed the lock, other than he had turned from the stove. It's unclear if he was in a position where he could already see the gap from that point. It's also slightly unclear. He did say he immediately, when he looked in the cabinet, could see that it was cannabis. It is a little unclear whether the flashlight went up simultaneously with his initial observation or if he made the observation and then confirmed with the flashlight. What is clear is that when he looked in the gap in the cabinet, what was readily viewable to anyone in that kitchen, he knew immediately that it was cannabis.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Awesome. You said that when he flashed the flashlight into the space, it was visible or it was apparent to anyone in that room that there was cannabis in there.
I should clarify that certainly a police officer who has experience with cannabis.
Anyone who had positioned himself or herself in that position would have seen that there was cannabis in there.
That is true. And again, the record is unclear. There's nothing to support the defense argument that there was a manipulation of movement within the kitchen to somehow exploit a gap. I do want to make that clear. But I think under Arizona versus Hicks, even giving the benefit of the doubt that perhaps he would have had to step to the side a little bit, he could see that there was a gap. Under Arizona versus Hicks, that would be okay because that's plain view.
Texas versus Brown also stands for the proposition that a police officer moving or shifting his position to get a better view of the inside of a glove compartment being searched by the driver for his driver's license does not render it a search. Bending down and looking at an angle is irrelevant to the Fourth Amendment.
That is correct. And Texas versus Brown further also involved a flashlight and also reaffirmed the holding that using a flashlight to illuminate an area does not transform the officer's actions into a search under the Fourth Amendment.
So we know those facts or factors from Hicks and from Texas versus Brown. Why was the officer still in the kitchen at that point when he determined that there was no damage as a result of the stove? The stove was off. The danger had basically cleared.
He was in the process of leaving the kitchen, Your Honor. So the way he described it is he had checked the stove and then he turned to leave the kitchen. And that is when he made his plain view observations. So
the cabinet, that's when he made his plain view observation of the padlocked cabinet.
It's not entirely clear whether he just saw the padlock or he also could see inside at that point. But again, under either scenario, plain view would apply under Hicks and Texas. But I think what's important to note is that when an officer is lawfully in a place, in a residence, for example, and he makes a plain view observation, his lawful purpose for being in that place doesn't automatically cease. So I believe it was in again, in Arizona versus Hicks, which the court noted that the lack of relationship between a reason for an entry into the location and the nature of the plain view observation is always going to exist. That's the nature of plain view. So the community caretaking or the emergency aid, the reason why the officers were lawfully in the apartment didn't suddenly cease when he saw what he saw in plain view.
Was he looking for a gas leak in the cabinet?
No. He was walking out of the kitchen.
Okay.
And as a police...
You said something that could be interpreted two different ways, and that is you said something to the effect that when he looked into the cabinet, he saw cannabis. But it would seem that you didn't mention whether or not when he looked into the cabinet, he turned the flashlight on, or whether he looked in the cabinet, couldn't see inside the cabinet, took his flashlight out and shined it in, and then saw the cannabis.
And again, the record is a little less than clear on the exact order of things, other than he said when he looked at the gap in the cabinet, he immediately saw cannabis. And for the purpose of plain view, based on the case law related to the flashlight, I submit that there is no distinction. Whether
let me ask you this. If this court were to determine that Officer Liebich actually conducted an unlawful search when he looked into that cabinet, wouldn't the state be entitled to argue good faith based upon the case law and case law in Illinois, in particular Pittman, for example, an officer conducting a sweep for eviction, looking into a bag or using his flashlight to confirm what he saw, those cases, would the state request, if in the event that we rule against you, a remand for a good faith argument?
Yes, Judge. In our brief, we did note that the state would, if this court were to find an unreasonable search under the Fourth Amendment took place, that remand, not reversal, would be appropriate for a number of reasons. One, the good faith exception is something we could possibly argue. We do not know the contents of the search warrant based on this record. So there is a possible independent probable cause. There could be an attenuation argument. So when the defendant is unsuccessful, obviously, on a motion to suppress, it never moves to that next step. Had the state lost on the motion to suppress, then we would have moved on to make whatever arguments requested, whatever type of additional hearing we felt was necessary to make all of the legal arguments that we could make that could then that could lead to a ruling that despite the Fourth Amendment violation, suppression was not warranted.
One of the things that trouble looking at this, why didn't the state call any officers after the trial court denied the original motion for directed finding?
I don't know, Judge. The two officers that were present, what was at issue? It was very clear that the issue in the motion filed by the defense was a narrow one, and it was limited to the viewing of what was in the cabinet by Officer Liebich. So those were the two witnesses that could speak to that because they were the ones that were, obviously Liebich was alone in the kitchen, but then Stanish confirmed his observations as far as the timing of it. And then obviously once Officer Liebich made that observation, then there was probable cause at that point. So, and the officers acted in the way that we would want officers to act, in the way that case law says that they should act when they make an observation under certain circumstances, then the appropriate thing to do is to go and get a search warrant before cutting open a padlocked cabinet. I would submit too that the defendant's focus on the manner in which, or the what the defendant may or may not have done to conceal items, that's not relevant to a plain view analysis. What's relevant is what can be seen. So this was an open cabinet. It was ajar. It could be viewed by anyone in that kitchen who could see the gap. So that doesn't.
Could I interrupt? Because
of course
I think you've answered the question. You said that probable cause was determined when Liebich saw the marijuana, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Now, did he see the marijuana when he turned around and spied the padlock and chain on the cabinet?
Again, Judge, I don't know based on the record if he saw the lock and the gap at the same time. But when he saw the cannabis in the open cabinet and he recognized cannabis based on his experience as a police officer.
When you say open, are you referring to the legal term open, like in plain view? Are you referring to open as in a fissure or gap in the cabinet?
I'm referring to the fact that the cabinet was ajar.
Okay. My question was, when the officer focused his attention on the cabinet, did he know that there was contraband in it?
I don't know if he saw the lock.
Why would he go and position himself, and why would he use a flashlight if he had seen cannabis previously?
Well, he may have done it to confirm it. Just like if he saw cannabis from a distance and he walked closer to it.
Those were the facts in Pittman, a first district case. A police officer doing a sweep sees what he thinks is cannabis and then he confirms it with a flashlight. But here, that's unclear.
Yes, and I'm not trying to play fast and loose with the facts. I'm trying to be, clear about the fact that I wish, and obviously with all Fourth Amendment cases, that you could break it down moment by moment, what the officer did. But that's not entirely clear. But he does say that when he saw the portion of the cabinet that was ajar, he immediately recognized what he saw inside that gap in the cabinet as cannabis based on his experience.
He also testified he saw syringes as well, correct?
I don't recall if Liebich saw syringes or Danish. You probably are correct.
Did the state admit into evidence the search warrant?
No, they did not.
Is that the reason why? Maybe I'm asking for conjecture on your side, but it would seem to me that normal practices would indicate that the search warrant would have been put into evidence by the state.
I don't necessarily think that would be true based on the limited nature of the motion. I believe there's discussion a number of times in the record about the fact that if there was going to be testimony or a challenge to the search warrant, that the defense would bring that in a separate motion.
That's actually, I think the Article 114 says it can only be one motion unless there's some change in circumstances or a change in facts, correct?
It does say there can be only one motion based on the same facts, but I think what it seemed to be what the discussion between the court and the parties was that if you're going to challenge the validity of a search warrant, that would be a different motion. So again, we don't have the benefit of that to establish whether or not the search warrant should have been brought up as part of the motion. But again, under the statute, under 114-12, it is the defendant's motion. It is his initial burden to establish that a search occurred. And obviously the state's position and the court's finding was that no search even occurred in this case. So based on the plain view doctrine.
If we determined that the search by Liebich was improper, does the search warrant fall or does it withstand scrutiny on the basis that there was other evidence other than the fruits of the poisonous tree?
I think we would have to go, I think it would have to be remanded to the trial court because we don't know what is included in the search warrant. If the search warrant was based solely on Officer Liebich's observations, plain view observations, or if in addition there were, there's a notation about there being an odor of cannabis once some of the gas fumes started to be cleared out. It's not clear whether that was included in the warrant. And also, I believe at some point the defendant may have admitted to having cannabis. So I would say that if there was a determination that the Fourth Amendment was violated by Officer Liebig's looking at into the open portion of the cabinet, that remand for further proceedings would be the appropriate remedy. And I see that my time is up. I'm happy to answer any additional questions.
Any other questions?
No. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Moore, you may proceed with rebuttal.
Just quickly, addressing Ms. Wontrova's last comments regarding Casey admitting that he had cannabis, that, as far as I'm concerned, or as far as I know, is nowhere in the record. Trial counsel tried to start talking about Casey's arrest, which ultimately would have led to whether or not he made any statements, but the judge precluded that questioning because the state objected to it. So that was never.
We have the transcript of his plea or the stipulated bench trial, and I believe that was included. And when we're looking at the record and affirming a trial court, we can look at the entire record, including trial record. So that's in the record, right?
I don't recall that being in the stipulated portions.
It is. We checked it this morning.
But then I stand corrected. But to counter the argument that there was no evidence that the officer had to get into a distorted position or view to look into the cabinet, just I asked this court to just look at defendant's exhibits 1 and 2. And you can see that there's just a minor gap left by a bad hinge on the bottom left of the cabinet. There's obviously the front facing view, you can't see into the cabinet. But looking at those pictures, it's pretty clear that he would have to bend over and get into a side angle and use his flashlight to look into this cabinet.
Well, how do you respond to the citation of Texas versus Brown that a police officer can shift his position, bend down, and move in order to be able to see into an area? And that in that case was a vehicle, but to look into and see what was in the glove compartment while the suspect was rifling through it to find his driver's license.
There, like you said, it was a car. Not everything that applies to cars applies to one's home, which has the highest level of privacy interests. But also, the officer could have moved for other reasons, such as officer safety, to make sure the person isn't trying to obtain a gun, and he sees something in plain view during that. That same level of, you know, other options of what the officer could possibly be doing are not present in this case.
The Supreme Court said that bending and moving in order to get a better angle was irrelevant for Fourth Amendment analysis.
I would have to look at that case a little bit closer, but I can't imagine that is true in every situation, specifically in a house looking into a locked cabinet when you're not even investigating a crime, when you're supposed to be tending to the safety of my client. And regarding his use of a flashlight, it is clear in the record that he did have to use his flashlight to look in. On page 81, it says, the question is, did you use your flashlight in order to look inside the cabinet? Answer, yes, I did. So that's pretty clear on the record. And as far as a good faith argument, there's absolutely no evidence that the officers had any good faith. In fact, there's evidence otherwise, considering he initiated this investigation.
Mr. Moore, again, it's an objective analysis. The subjective intent or motives of the officers are irrelevant.
I was under the impression that you stated that this could be excused through good faith.
Good faith is an argument that's made based on objective circumstances as well.
I'm getting to the objective circumstances, which is within a minute or two of entering this house, he's initiated a criminal investigation. Not only that, but the officer who was tending to my client's safety, which is the reason why they were there, he called him away from that responsibility in order to deal with this low-level drug offense, which objectively shows bad faith, that he wasn't there to help my client. He was there in order to look inside of his locked cabinets.
Let me ask you this. Do we know from this record whether or not the police officers ran a criminal history check on the defendant before they entered the home? Do we know?
We don't know, but that should not factor into whether or not they can look into this cabinet.
Mr. Moore, you're making it sound like that they walked into this house not to check on the safety of your client, but to find some criminal activity. Where is that indicated in the record?
I was just arguing that based on Officer Liebich's actions, he was, in the least, he was very easily distracted from his community caretaking responsibilities by a locked cabinet, with, by his own testimony, perhaps within a minute of entering the house.
Can't both objectives be taking place at the same time? Community Not caretaking while also noticing, which in fact is what happened, because while Stanish did leave the defendant for a time, he went back into the bedroom and talked to the defendant again and finally talked him into coming out of the house. Right?
There's case law that says that community caretaking cannot be initiated to initiate a criminal investigation. So in the
What case says that?
I can submit a supplemental brief. My time's up. I don't have it on the top of my head. If you would like me to submit a brief supplemental pointing that case out, I could. But just addressing another
community caretaking, I get your point. Trying to make up or manufacture a community caretaking situation as a ruse to conduct a criminal investigation would violate the Fourth Amendment. Is that your point?
My overall point is the Fourth Amendment was violated when this officer decided to initiate a criminal investigation while he was in a community caretaking role.
If he turned around and saw a dead body or a hand out of that cabinet, should he just walk out of that kitchen? That is what you're saying.
No, if he saw something hanging out of the cabinet, that would be in plain view. This, what is inside of the cabinet, is not in plain view. He's exerted a reasonable expectation of privacy over the contents of this cabinet, and that shouldn't be defeated by a minor structural flaw in that cabinet.
There's more than 80 years of jurisprudence from the United States Supreme Court and virtually every state in this country that says the use of a flashlight does not negate plain view. And looking into an area where, and you conceded that somebody who was a guest in a home could have looked in there. That's what police officers have a responsibility to do with, and or can take that on themselves.
I don't think that Mr. Moore said what you just said. I think what he said was that if a guest looked in, it wouldn't be state action, and that therefore it would not be a search. I don't think he said that Mr. Gangstead or Hagestad would have given consent for a guest to look inside or to break the chain in order to see what was inside.
That's a very concise and accurate recitation of my view.
Well, a police officer, in terms of making a plain view observation, stands in the shoes of a private citizen or a guest in a home.
Well, in that case, if a guest in the home tried to look into a clearly locked cabinet, I would imagine that the homeowner would take umbrage with that.
Okay.
Similarly, he's exerted a reasonable expectation of privacy that says, stay out of this cabinet, and the police are required to honor that. And this wasn't an open cabinet. It wasn't a jar, as the state has claimed in this argument. This cabinet was only open an inch or less. But on his testimony, it's not. So
what if let's take this example. Police officers go to a home. They walk up. They're there because there's a report of some misbehavior. And the curtains are drawn. They knock on the door. No one answers the door. And then they look on the side with their flashlight through an opening where the curtain is drawn, and they notice contraband, marijuana or whatever. Would that be a violation of plain view? Would that be a search?
From what you've said, I would say no, because the officers were there in order to investigate. They're concerned about the safety of the people in the house and looking through the curtains.
No, this is about a criminal investigation, an investigation where a suspicion of manufacture of a controlled substance like methamphetamine. Would that be a search?
It would depend on the fact.
Using a flashlight through that opening.
Your Honor, it depends on the facts of if the curtain is open, if it's open like a small inch
amount. The curtain's drawn, but there's enough to see through by looking at a position on the side.
Then unless they have a justifiable reason to be where they're standing, it all comes down to, are they justified to be where they're standing? If they aren't, none of this flashlight talk matters. I'm not taking umbrage with the use of the flashlight. It all comes down to, does the officer have a legal reason to be there? I don't know if I have enough information based on what you said to make that determination, but it would ultimately come down to whether or not the officer is legally where he's at looking through that window.
Sue, any questions?
No, sir.
Thank you. We will take the case under advisement. It's been a very interesting oral argument. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Marshall, will you please close out the case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.